Before I begin, as an important part of my own religion, thank the sound person. I'm always so grateful when we have somebody back there at the board. Thank you. My home congregation is just recently, the First Unitarian in Baltimore, has just gotten a new and expensive sound system. So for perhaps the first time in the nearly 200 years history of that building, people can hear what's going on in the sanctuary. My home congregation is also a congregation that strongly supports the Black Lives Matter movement. There is a beautiful banner proclaiming Black Lives Matter hanging from our portico. It hangs high for all to see it. We have it up there because that's the place to hang a huge banner, but also to keep it safe. We have had two or three previous banners have had mishaps. They have been stolen or they've been defaced. And typically, and this is not unique to us, of course, congregations all over the country, whatever kind of congregation they are, have had trouble with their Black Lives Matters banners. In fact, the Towson Unitarian Universalist Church, just north of Baltimore, has had to have a closed circuit, you know, camera, security camera on their banner, and had an arrangement with the police to monitor things. Typically, if they're not stolen, these banners are defaced by having the word black cut out or crossed out and the word all written in. In this context, the statement all lives matter seems to be an explicit rejection of the idea that black lives matter. It's the all in this case seems like, you know, it should have an asterisk on it, like maybe in the drug ads or the auto dealership ads, where it says, you know, all lives matter, asterisk, some exclusions apply. And you know, this is a big issue for us, I think, because we are a denomination of both Black Lives Matter and All Lives No Exception Matter. Our first principle, located in the front of your gray hymn book, says, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Every person certainly says all to me. But that all is not some uniform, same all the way through substance. The building blocks of the all are the group and individual identities with which we see ourselves. Our differences are important and should be recognized and appreciated. But we also need to have a sense of belonging to a whole, to an encompassing community. The individual, the group, and the community are complementary, not contradictory concepts. You know, and over 25 years ago, Rodney King back in Los Angeles said, we all want to get along. But our goal here, I think, is more than just to get along. We want a society that respects and benefits from the different communities that make up the all. And here when I'm talking about the all in my text, I've got a capital A all there. But here's the problem. You know, all lives matter kind of lacks punch, doesn't it? Worth and dignity, we talk about worth and dignity all the time. But they're abstractions. You know, they're words. Sometimes we capitalize them even. But they're abstractions. We need to think about people. We need to think about particular and specific human lives. We need to name those lives. Black lives matter. LGBT lives matter. Cops' lives matter. Deplorables' lives matter. Unless we can say that the elements making up the all individually matter, all doesn't matter. The edifice of all isn't complete unless all the elements are represented and valued. So let's look at some of these building blocks of the all. Excuse me. The Black Lives Matter movement provides us with a useful starting point. And I got to say at the onset, I think Black Lives Matter is a great gift to the American people. It's important in its own right, indeed crucial in its own right, but it's also useful to how we approach the particulars of other identities. Here are three reasons why Black Lives Matter is important. First, it's necessary. Our times call for specific, intense focus on Black lives in American society, on our history of institutional racism, on policy, on the current situation, on future needs. We need it because, in many ways, our country acts as though Black lives do not matter. And I don't think I need to detail the ways to you. They just go on and on. All lives matter, but if a particular part of the body hurts, we pay attention to that body, to that part. If you smash your finger, you don't say, "Oh, that's okay, the rest of my body doesn't hurt." No, you pay attention to the part that hurts. If a part of our social body is suffering, we can, and indeed we must, alleviate that suffering. That's one. Two, Black Lives Matter invites us to look at the history of our country and discover that concern for Black lives has been absent from almost all of American history. Our history is amply demonstrated from the earliest time down to the present by active measures and by indifference that Black lives have not mattered to the dominant culture. This is important to know because it helps us wipe away the many myths and untruths that distort the way we look at today's America. Whatever category, or actually, more importantly, whatever categories, plural, that we personally fall into, we cannot see ourselves and we cannot understand our world if we do not well and truly see our history, nor are we likely to alter our behavior to create a better world. Okay, there's a third reason. Black lives is good for America, including those of us who aren't black. The culture that allows the police to kill and bully black people allows them to bully and kill those who are not black with impunity. Oppressive regimes oppress everybody, as whites in, say, apartheid South Africa discovered. Even if the oppression is more burdensome to the unfavored groups, those of us who are not black should be grateful to the Black Lives Matter movement. And here I gotta be really clear, I'm not saying care about black lives because, even if you're not black, because caring about black lives may save your own life. I'm not making an instrumental argument here, but I am saying that that's the way the ethical universe works. What's true for black lives is true for all lives. Indeed, there's a group called the Organizing Collective of Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism made the same point in principle number 7 of their 7 principles of black lives. That principle 7 states, acknowledging the ways in which a supremacist society diminishes us all is a critical part of the movement for black lives. When the most marginalized of our society is free, then we will all be truly free. We call on our faith to affirm the truth that only when black lives matter will all lives truly matter. As Dr. King said, injustice everywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. These Black Lives leaders, then, are directing us to build a true All Lives Matter movement, one that doesn't include exceptions, and are built on all the components of the all. These Black Unitarian Universalists are reminding us that our affirmation to the particularity of Black lives is also an affirmation of the particularity of other lives. They appropriately move from their particularity to embrace the generality. In so many ways, Black Lives Matter simply and powerfully says, pay attention. Pay attention. So what other groups should we pay attention to? Let's look at a couple. Consider gay, lesbian, transgender, and bi lives. Writing in the New York Times a while back, Frank Bruni, he's one of my favorite columnists, wrote about a then-new PBS documentary about James Beard, the influential food writer. I bet there's a lot of Beardians out here in the audience. The documentary does not hide the act that, in Bruni's words, Beard was an exuberantly gay man. Beard did not hide this when he was alive, but his obituaries only obliquely hinted at that. The obituary writers gave the same silent treatment to Clegg Claiborne, Susan Sontag, and Sally Ride, just to name three other influential figures in American culture. Bruni sees this as an example of, and I quote, how often oppression is an act of omission rather than commission, not letting people give voice and vent to much of what moves them and to all of what defines them, and not recognizing and honoring that ourselves. Here's another example, one that I'm sure many of you recall, the horrible Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida on June 12th, 2016. And remember, that was that nightclub that was frequented by gays and lesbians. That's how we thought of it. And I know my congregation had an impromptu memorial service for that. That was just particularly crushing to our gay and lesbian and bisexual members who felt that their community had been particularly attacked. But that was not the only identity these people in the Pulse nightclub had. A June 2016 by seven Latinx, Latino, Latina, Unitarian Universalist religious professionals of color pointed out that the victims were not just gay people, but they were Spanish-speaking gay people. And specifically, at least 23 of the victims were Puerto Rican. In thinking about the victims, they charged us to remember that their race and ethnicity is an innate part of their humanity and must not be erased by a media that centers white expressions of queerness. We assert this is an important part of the shooting that needs to be recognized. Now, did you notice how the identities are piling up here? In the quotation I just read, we had race, language, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. We are not just one thing. Note also that these identities were such that in the larger society tends to disparage and not highly value. We can see how the nation has leaped to the aid of devastated Puerto Rico. These are not valued lives, but these are an important part of a person's life. Indeed, this multiplicity of identities was recognized by those Black Unitarian Universalists whom I quoted a few minutes ago. Their principle number one stated that Black is not a unitary description. It enumerated some of the lives that mattered. Queer Black lives, trans Black lives, formerly incarcerated Black lives, differently abled Black lives, black women's lives, immigrant black lives, black elderly and children's lives. All black lives matter and are creatures of this space. We throw no one under the bus. We all rise together. Close quote. This is absolutely true, and not only true for black lives, it's true for any category you can think of. It's true for everybody. It's true for me. It's true for you. Nobody lives in just one category. We're not like gummy bears, you know, the same solid sameness all the way through. To borrow from Walt Whitman, every person is large and contains multitudes. We contain contradictions. Depending on setting, one or another of our identities might become paramount, but our individuality is multitudinous. Our congregations are places where we can come with all aspects of our identity, with all our contradictions, and be known and loved for our complexities, and be valued for the contributions that our personalities, our unique individual personalities, make to this whole where we join together here on Sunday morning. You know, here's an example. We had an example of just this morning, where you had your joys and sorrows, and you have, it's a double thing you had. It's really nice. I liked it. Some people came forward and, you know, talked into the microphone and told about their concerns and lit a candle. Later on, some people just stood in silence. And some of us just sat there. But we weren't just sitting there. You know, we were there with the people who were talking and with the people who were not standing. And the people who were expressing their joys and sorrows and the people who were standing to commemorate their losses weren't doing that. You know, those were individual losses, some of them private losses. I'm a stranger here. I don't know why some of these people were standing. Many of you do. But you know, we were all there together. We were all part of the same community, sharing, even if we didn't know the specifics of why that person was standing. We only see, and in so many other ways, we come, you know, we see the person's outer characteristics. We come to some of our congregations and we see tall people and short people, people of various hues, from light to dark, people somewhat formally dressed like I am this morning, and people informally dressed as most of you are, and as I will be next week when I'm in the congregation. We see only the individual's outer characteristics, to be sure, but in many congregations we see great diversity. And we do all this in the context of community. This is a microcosm, you know, of what we'd like to have in our larger society. And here, let's in fact move this from the congregation to the larger society, the kind of society we want to create. It doesn't call for sameness of thought or personal or group characteristics or for even doing the same thing. But we are all together, you know, in this room in mutual purpose and respect. And this is what we want to see in the larger society when we leave this building. That's what we want to try to create. This means, you know, not just tolerating each other. This means more than being willing to say black lives or blue lives or deplorable lives matter, but to actively engage in a way that doesn't just say simply live and let live, but proudly says, despite our differences, we are part of the same community. To explain what I mean, I need to talk about two words and how we use them. And they're words we use a lot, I think, in our congregations. They are diversity and pluralism. And here I'm going to draw on the work of Donna Eck up at the Pluralism Project at Harvard University. We are a diverse society. But as the Pluralism Project states, mere diversity without real encounter and relationship will yield increasing tensions in our society. I think the All Lives Matter slogan, as opposed to, you know, as used by the opponents of Black Lives, is, not as the way I've been using it, is an example by the tension created by lack of relationship. Diversity can just mean that we have a lot of differences, but we're simply seeing the other as the other, you know, somebody different. We can live side by side, but at best ignoring the other, at worst experiencing friction. Pluralism means that we have grappled with, or we are currently grappling with, these differences. It means, in the Pluralism Project's words, the energetic engagement with diversity. Isn't that a neat phrase? The energetic engagement with diversity. It's not just about getting along. It means to be able to encounter the commitments of the other. So for many of us, it means being open to dialogue with, shall we call them, the deplorables, people who hold such different values, to listen to them, to hope that they will listen to us. Because after all lives matter. And their lives matter just as our lives matter. So think back to our responsive reading. I've just said that the diverse characteristics of our lives matter. And I've just defined pluralism as going beyond the goal of diversity. But what was the refrain of our reading this morning? We all sat here and read, "It will not matter," when I mention all these differences. Is this a contradiction? I don't think it's a contradiction. I think it's a distinction. In A Litany of Restoration, Marjorie Bowens Wheatley raises a great truth, and that is that the characteristics mentioned and others implied shouldn't get in the way of relationships, whether social or professional or whatever, that we stand together as a community despite our differences. It's an important message, which sometimes might seem an easy read in our communities. After all, isn't this what we're about? But you know, even for us, even from our own UU churches, even in recent times, and perhaps even today in some congregations, this is, achieving these goals is a work in progress. Unstated in this reading, but for us to fill in, is the great truth that we should use these differences as great gifts that give us access to human experience and possibility beyond what we can achieve by our own limited identities. If we ignore these differences and act as if we don't matter, we diminish our own access to richness. So all of us are unique and contribute something essential and irreplaceable to the ethical universe. We learn from those who are different from us. And, you know, incidentally, this is something that I say to couples when we talk to them about wedding ceremonies. You know, you bring your differences as well as your similarities to this union. This is what, you know, this is part of that special spark that you have. So think, just as one final thing, is, you know, think of the way that we are religiously different, but we come here and we make it work. For a long time, those of us who are Unitarian Universalist Christians, Unitarian Universalist pagans, Unitarian Universalist humanists, have not only coexisted, but have developed a mutually respected religious home. And I'm sure we have a variety of views out there in this congregation, but yet you come together in this wonderful community you have. So step by step, sometimes by tiny step, sometimes by giant step, we move forward. We take our steps as unique individuals, no one else is like any one of you here. But we take them in community. We take them together. We take them in the company of a precious group of people who are traveling the same road, who are creating a community that recognize says that everybody's life matters, that everyone's life is valuable. And that's the essence of our religion. All these words for now are just a few sentences. Everybody's presence affects the whole. We are separate, unique, irreplaceable individuals, yet part of the same whole. In all of our differences, this congregation, you people right here, you represent something that we have in common, a set of values, of behaviors, of community that we want to be part of. I believe that the way we are together is the way that our communities, that the nation, even the world can be together. The nation, the world, maybe a stretch now, or even ever, but obtainable here in this congregation, in your communities that you live in, I believe we're already on our way. Step by step, you'll get there. Let's walk together on this path. We'll get there. Speaking of getting there and walk, taking step by step, our closing hymn, one of my favorites, 157, it's a